Kum lenen a blat gemara. Today's gemara is daf yud ches omer aleph. We learned the Mishnah where Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Sorry, we daf yud ches omer aleph. Continuing to focus on the Mishnah, the arguments of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, where Beis Shammai didn't allow you to do things before Shabbos, even though on Shabbos it happens by itself, and Beis Hillel was matir. We're up to the two dots, about seven lines from the top. The Rabbanon, learned in Ebraisa, Lo yaskir adam kelov lenochri be'erev Shabbos. You're not permitted to hire out your objects, your items, to a goy on Friday. But bedalad vehei mut, but on Wednesday and on Thursday, you are permitted. Now this Ebraisa, the simple reading would be that this goes according to Beis Shammai, who says that your utensils have to rest on Shabbos as well. But most Rishonim say if it's Beis Shammai, and that's why the Rif doesn't bring this whole Braisa down, but most Rishonim say if it would Beis Shammai, then why, if you gave it to him on Wednesday and Thursday, is it all right? Makes no difference when you gave it to him. Your utensils need to rest on Shabbos. So they all learn that this is going according to Sai Beis Shammai, Sai Beis Hillel. We're not talking about utensils, talking about clothing or items of clothing. Even Shammai would say permitted. So on Wednesday and Thursday, it's all right, but not on Friday. Because it looks like that you're taking money from the goy for what he's doing on Shabbos. And looks like it's Marasain. Looks like you're getting paid for Shabbos. Kiyoshevay, similarly, you're allowed to have a goy doing things for you, and you can take if it's Char Havlo, but not just for the day of Shabbos itself. Kiyoshevay Havlo means that you say for the week, I'll pay a weekly wage or a monthly wage, and so on. Kiyoshevay, similarly, you shouldn't send out letters on Friday with a goy, because but on Wednesday and Thursday it's all right, because it looks like he's working for you on Shabbos. Omru Allah, but they said regarding Rabbi Yosi HaKoyin, the Amil, others want to say, it's Rabbi Yosi HaChosid, he never ever gave a letter in the hand of a goy, because maybe they would carry it on Shabbos, even if it was on Wednesday, Thursday, Monday, didn't care. He would never give it over to the hand of a goy. Torah be learned, starts off saying you do not send a letter with a goy at Shabbos on Friday, unless you fix the price. And what's the idea of fixing a price? The logic is if you fix a price and say, you're not paying him by the hour or by the day, you say, here, $50 for issuing this letter, to bring this letter here. So then the goy is working in his own time. He's getting $50, he can bring it today, tomorrow. So whatever he does on his own. And this is the basis of the whole machlekes is about kablonos, when you hire a goy to work for you on a contract, if he's allowed to work on Shabbos. So Rabbi Natan wants to say, you see clearly from here, that a goy can work for you on Shabbos if you give him a contract, and even if it's working in a mechuber, in your house, building your house, renovating your house, it's all right, because the goy is working for himself. His nephew says, no, it's only talking about if the goy takes the object with himself away from your house, like in this case of a letter, something metalklin, so it doesn't appear, there's no maris ayin here. But if he works inside your house or in the Jewish area building a house, then even though it's on contract, it looks like you paid him and therefore it's osir. And Rabbi Natan himself did not rely on his own heter. Anyway, so it seems in the first part of the braisa, there's no way you can send a letter with a goy unless you gave him a fixed price. Beis Shammai says, Kadesh Yigi Lebesa. Beis Shammai says, it doesn't work unless the mail carrier can actually bring it to the house of the recipient before Shabbos. Beis Shammai, Kadesh Yigi Lebesa, some of the chaymah. It's enough if he gets into the city where the recipient lives, and that's it. And the environment, and the perimeter of the city, and that's good enough. Says the Gemara, why? Valei Kotzas, he just said that you gave him a fixed price. Therefore, he's working for himself. So who cares? Omer Avsheshes, He can take it whenever he wants. He's working for himself. So Rav Sheshes says, Harikam, this is how you meant to learn the Braisa. The Im like Kotzas. Now, the first part is you have to fix a price. The second part is, what happened if you didn't fix a price? You just asked him to deliver a letter on your behalf and you gave it to him before Shabbos. So according to Beis Shammai, Im like Kotzas. It's according to Beis Shammai, you have to actually deliver the letter before Shabbos. It gets near the wall. And then yes, he had Rabbi Akiva's opinion as soon as he leaves your house. And that's how he understood Beis Hillel. Says the Gemara of Amrit, if you're talking about he didn't fix a price, you just start off the price of saying you do not send a letter with a goy unless you fix the price. And then you tell me, if you didn't, this is how you do it. It's a contradiction. Amrit, you said in the beginning, Ein Mishal, you don't send. Loi Kasha, that's not a problem. If the recipient of the letter lives mainly in this town, so then even though you didn't fix a price, you know for sure that you're going to get there. So therefore, according to Hillel, since you walk into the town, it's good enough. According to Bishamai, you know for sure you'll be delivering it before Shabbos. But if the person, the recipient, is not there in town, and Rashi says, but davar means the member of the government, because they usually travel a lot, but in the and they usually get to receive a lot of letters. So if the member of the government does not hang around the town, then there's no guarantees. If you didn't fix a price, there's no guarantees he'll get there before Shabbos. There's no guarantees, even if you get to the town, that he's home, or even if you get to his house, that he's there, and therefore you shouldn't send. So when the Mishnah starts, the price starts off, don't send, it's talking about he's not generally in town, he travels. But if the price says if he is in town, then if he didn't fix the price, you can still bring it as long as you get there before Shabbos. Says the Gemara Torah, when we learned, ein mafligin b'svina, you should not go onto a ship, pachas megimul yomim koyin l'shabbos, do not go onto a ship before, at least 3 days before Shabbos. Which means Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So Wednesday, some say even Thursday, it has to be, doesn't have to, you know, you have to have 3 days. So Thursday morning you're ready, it's like Thursday's a day, Friday, and Shabbos is a third day. Anyway, Rashi does not say at all why not. And everybody wonders why Rashi doesn't give any reason whatsoever why you shouldn't travel on a ship. But I'll tell you in a second the different opinions why you shouldn't. You're going for your own personal matters. You're going for a mitzvah shabbat. You can go even on Friday onto a ship. And in a minute I'll tell you that the others hold even on Shabbos. But if you're going to be on the ship on Shabbos, you should tell the captain of the ship that, you know, I want you to rest on Shabbos, knowing that they won't listen to you. It doesn't matter if they don't, as long as you did your part. Rishbag says you don't even have to say anything. But a boat ride, like a ferry ride from Tzoy to Tzidin, which is only an hour, a couple hours away, then I feel better of Shabbos, but even Friday you're allowed to travel. Now what's going on here? Why can't you travel on the ship? Big malchikas are showing you. Like this, if I remember correctly, it's like six opinions. But Bekitzis, interesting. Okay, the Rif says, the Rabbeinu Chananel says the reason is we're talking about a boat versus a ship. A boat generally it only goes on very low rivers. Therefore, it's not very deep, very shallow rivers. Hence, it is a problem of Tchum Shabbos. Traveling on Shabbos is a problem of Tchum Shabbos. But a big ship, which only goes in the deep, in the depths of the water, there's no Tchum Shabbos because you're above 10 Tvachim from the ground, and therefore you can't be in Shabbos. That's what Rabbeinu Chananel says. So everybody asks, and so what's the difference if you started your trip on a Monday, you start on a Friday. When it comes Shabbos, you'll be going Tchum Shabbos on these shallow boats, in these boats in the shallow waters. And another problem is, and it's only really limited to a boat, not a ship. So why does it say Svina? Should it then delineate it? It depends if it's a large ship or a small ship. Anyway, the Rif learns that people get seasick, and it's the midst of Einik Shabbos. It takes 3 days to adjust. So if you leave Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, get seasick, you ruin your Einik Shabbos. But if you go before 3 days, then you did not ruin your Einik Shabbos whatsoever. But if you're going for a Dvar Mitzvah, then you employ the rule of Oisik V'Mitzvah Potter V'la Mitzvah, then even on a Thursday or Friday you can travel. And based on this, we also say you don't do elective surgery on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or others say Thursday and Friday because you're ruining, or others say even Thursday morning you're allowed to, but Thursday afternoon because you're ruining your Einik Shabbos. That's the Rif. And the next the Baal HaMoyer says we're talking about a sakana here. We're talking about a sakana, and by a sakana, if on Shabbos itself something happens on the ship that you have to do mechal Shabbos, you're allowed to, of course, pekuach nefesh. But you put yourself on a Wednesday or Thursday, Friday when you start saying the chunerano, you're already anticipating Shabbos. If you put yourself Wednesday and Thursday, Friday, that in a place of sakana to come Shabbos, you're now in a matzah for sakana and you have to do things on Shabbos that you shouldn't do. And that's why you shouldn't travel on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. So everybody asks in the Baal HaMoyer, so why if it's a Dvar Mitzvah, you're allowed to? You still put yourself in the Sakon, you have to be Mechal Shabbos. But anyway, the Ramban says, Tosa says a whole other thing. It's talking about a boat or a ship. It makes no difference. You're not on a rowboat on Shabbos. You're not on a Shabbos because it's like swimming. And you're not on a swim on Shabbos Midir Rabbanon, which is, that's the basis for the Issa of rowing on Shabbos. But why can't you row a boat on Shabbos? If it's not going at Chum, let's say, it's inside a lake that's inside inland, it's because of you might be going swimming. The Shvus Yaakov writes in a tshuva that in his town, in Reisher, they had a custom that every Shabbos, after eating, they would all go rowing. After the chont, instead of the shpatzir, they all went rowing. and he would lambast them. It took years to change that minhag. People didn't know it was an isur rowing. That's based on Tosfos that it's like swimming. The Ramban says the problem is that if that they're going to be doing malachas for you, they're going to be doing malachas for you on Shabbos, the goyim. And he says, therefore, but if it's if the majority of the people are goyim, then he says you're allowed to go on the ship. And he goes further, you're allowed to even start traveling, embark on a Shabbos. The only problem is if you're embarking on a Shabbos, you'll be going to Chum, because the initial water is shallow. So if you go Friday afternoon, and you're kind of shvisa, so therefore the boat becomes your home, and then you can get off the boat and come back Shabbos afternoon, the entire ship now is your home, and therefore you can walk around, there's no problem. You can actually go on these Shabbos cruises if they let you come on Friday and be kind of shvisa. Anyway, the Gemara brings an analogy. It's talking about we learned similar, but going to war. Ain't sorry, you should not go ahead and surround the city of Goyim. Pachas Megim, go to war. If it's less than 3 days, Shabbos, Koyim Shabbos. If you start it, you don't stop. And each one of those is showing you learn that the war is very similar to what we said before. There's Oinig Shabbos, or the Pekuach Nefesh, you're putting yourself in a Maimed of Maskuach Nefesh. You're allowed to fight back even on Shabbos. If you start it, you continue fighting. And here the Rif brings that famous Breiser, which the Rebbe always used to bring, and that is that if Goyim come to you on Shabbos for Miske Kashu Tevin, you don't go out, if they want to do business, then you just, you don't go out to war. But if you're living, unless they're coming with weapons, then even on Shabbos you're allowed to defend yourself, mitzvah to defend yourself. But if you live on the border, on the boundary of Eretz Yisrael, and Goyim come, al Iske Kashu Tevin, they're coming, so-called to do business, you should go and greet them with your weapons, make sure that you stand there, show force. In our family, we followed Shammai. We didn't give anything to the launderer at Shabbos, and our white clothes we gave him 3 days prior, which means white clothes is much more difficult to clean. This was the custom of the family of Gamliel. They would give their white clothes to a launderer at least 3 days prior to Shabbos. But it's Tzvuyim, their colored clothing, I feel about Erev Shabbos, even on Friday. So a side thing we learned from them, for some reason, white stuff was much more difficult to clean than colored stuff to launder. And the Gemara tells a story similar. Why do we need to know this? A man once gave one of the colored clothing to a launderer to clean for him. He asked the launderer, new kama boy, he said, what's the price? I'll charge you the same I charge for white. Malay, he said, you cheater. The rabbis already taught me that you know that colored clothing is far easier to clean than white clothing. Therefore, based on that, he realized that launderers shouldn't really be trusted. Says, if you give clothing to a launderer to clean for you, you should know before you give it to him, make sure he knows that you're measuring the clothes. You should measure it in its length. If you take it back, measure again. Why? If suddenly you find out that your clothing is longer than when you gave it to him, it was only like 4 feet long, and now it's 4.5 feet long. After that, you know how he made your loss? The metachi, he stretched it out. It's all stretched now. You can't even wear it. The butts, and if you see that it's shorter than what you gave him, after that, he caused your loss, the kovtze. It shrunk. In other words, after his experiences, he says, don't trust him. Do it yourself. The Shavin, however, Shavin, they'll both agree that even though Shammai says you're allowed to do malachas on Friday, but both say Toyin, you're allowed to put on that beam on the olives. Once you gave the olives to start pressing out, you put a beam to continue oozing out the oil. And the same thing with grapes. The gula, you're allowed to put that round, heavy rock on top of the or beams on top of the grapes to continue. Once you start crushing, you should continue oozing out on Shabbos. Says the Gemara, I don't understand Shammai. Shammai didn't allow any of these other things happening, put wool inside and all that, because Shvisa's Kalim or whatever, and here suddenly he allows the base about. He was worried, Gzeira, that if you're going to do this on Friday, you'll do it on Shabbos, you'll do Malacha Deraisa, and yet, when it comes, and we know squeezing grapes and olives is Isa Deraisa, Schitta, which is Mefarek, Dosh, you're separating the liquid from the solid, so how is it that Shammai allows you to place these beams on the grapes and olives right before Shabbos? Says the Gemara, Maishna Kul, the Gozbe Shammai, why all of them, the Bishamai Goizer, Maishna Kobe, the Babi Gobe, the Gozbe wasn't Goizer, says the Gemara. Hanach, all of those, the Ovid Luhu B'Shabbos, all of those, if you have done them on Shabbos, Mechayv Chatas, you desecrate the Shabbos, and Isa Deraisa, so therefore Shammai was worried, even on Erev Shabbos. Gozruhu B'Heshammai, Erev Shabbos Im Chashaycha. So the Shammai said that even Friday afternoon before Shabbos, I don't want to do it. Of a Koydes Beis Abad, but the beams of a Beis Abad, Viguli Hagas, the beams of Beis Abad and the Guli Agas, the Ovid Luhu B'Shabbos L'Mechayv Chatas, even if you would have done it on Shabbos, you wouldn't be chayiv a korban chatas. Now, why not? Why would you go to chatas? Because they're squeezing out, oozing out on its own. As long as you start on Friday, whatever happens now on Shabbos, you're not over a chayiv chatas. Therefore, the gozu, they weren't geyser. Even Shammai is made, we're not going to be geyser placing these beams on Friday. So, man tana, who is it that holds the chomidi, the osim, and mele, anything that happens by itself, shapid, is oozed out by itself, it's all right. I want you to know, Rabbi Shmuel, this is the author of that opinion, is actually Rabbi Shmuel. And he'll explain. But now, we look in the Mishnah, Hashoim, garlic, Vahabaisa, these are immature, unripe grapes that are, you know, still just budding, which is very sour. And in fact, what they do with the juice that flows out of Baisa is not to drink, but more to marinate. And vahamelilais, and also the wheat that they're not ripe, which are still very very tender. They used to squeeze them, and they, some kind of a juice would or sap would come out of them, and they used to use it as a dip. Shiraskan by yoim. If you already started, there's a few steps in the procedure. The first one is rosak, which means basically the initial crush. You broke them down so that the juices can start oozing. So if you would have done that by yom during the day, Friday at Shabbos, Rabbi Shmuel says yigma mishatechshach, that you're allowed to continue with it into the night, and you chatchil allowed to put beams on there. In other words, to start the crushing on beams before Shabbos. No, but once you crushed them a little bit, and now you're placing beams to continue the process. You can put these kalim on top of the olives of the grapes and to continue. And the chatchil allowed to do that. So therefore, following Rabbi Shmuel, Beis Shammai Beis Hillel says you can put these beams. Rabbi Kiva says, lo yigmar. He says you're not allowed to put them under these heavy beams to continue into the Shabbos. Because if you do them, if you would right now, you know, just continue with your hand, you'd be over Nisa Deraisa, so don't even do it every Shabbos. Rabbi Shmuel says, no, you're allowed to do the Shabbos, because even if you go ahead and squeeze them further, you didn't really start, since you already started the squeezing process, if you continue further, it's not no longer Nisa Deraisa. That's the Rabbi Yeshua Chanina. Rabbi Elazar, who's the Amira, who's Rabbi Elazar ben Pedos, said in the name of Rabbi Elazar the Tana, which is Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua. That's Rabbi Elazar. He that now we learned chala is dvash. You have these honeycombs shediskin ber Shabbos. So the honey comes. So you have the honey is separated from the comb. If you started the process erev dvash erev Shabbos, I mean v'yotzu ma'atzman, and then it continued flowing out on its own. Usher is forbidden, even though you started before Shabbos. Forbidden. Rabbi Elazar matir. Rabbi Elazar says once you started the you started crushing and it will ooze out anyway on its own. All you're doing it is, let's say on Shabbos, you're going to accelerate that which already would have happened by itself. There's no longer an Issa Deraisa. So therefore, you're allowed to do it before Shabbos. Therefore, Rabbi Elazar holds any honey that comes out by itself, you're allowed to use that honey on Shabbos. We're not going to be geyser if we're going to allow you to use that honey on Shabbos, that oozing out on Shabbos. Next time you're going to squeeze on Shabbos, you're going to squeeze it right now. Because even if you did squeeze it, there's only osur derabanan. Why? Because anyway, the honey would have flowed out. It would have taken a few hours, and you did it quickly. But that's not osur hatayr anymore. Now the question is, Rabbi Yeshua Bar Chanina, my time of Amar Rabbi Elazar, why doesn't he bring this Mishnah, some Feisha Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar, that he holds that once, you know, it started oozing out, it would have oozed out anyway. It's only a question of quickening it up. It's only the Rabbanim. And the same thing with our Mishnah here. Once you already initially crushed the grapes and you initially crushed the olives, then if you initially crushed the grapes, if you crushed the olives, and it would have anyway flowed out, all you're doing is accelerating the process. That's only with the Rabbanon. Therefore, Shaman will hold us all right. So it will be perfect. Why doesn't Rabbi Yitzchanin say that? Says the Gemara, Amaloch, I think that the case of the honeycombs is very different than the case of the grapes and the olives. In what way? Hasim, who over there it is, the Mikara Eichel, Ulbasaiv Eichel. There's no real, even if you squeeze it out properly, there's no real Isa than Isa, because all you're doing is separating food from food. That's not what Mefarik is. Mefarik is like milking a cow. Mefarik is when you're separating, you know, the wheat from the chaff. You're separating one entity from another entity. It's completely two separate, the liquid from the fruit. So that's an Isa der Isa. You bring me an example from Chalos Dvash, which is never Asa der Isa, because it's food from food. So mikor oichel, it starts out being food, ulubesayif oichel, and it ends up being food. So therefore, there's no real isa deraisa. So there's no gzeira, because it's not really schita. But over here, mikor oichel. First, the grapes are olives, vahashta mashka, and you're squeezing it out, and you're turning them into olive oil, whatever it is. Therefore, it's very different. It's a different. Therefore, we should be gzeir. That's why I had to bring you the other Rabbi Shmuel. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Lazar Amalach, Rabbi Lazar ben Pedos will respond to you. L'chayde honey, Hashemin le Rabbi Lazar feels different from Nami Shmuel. You're right that the case of honey might be different, but I know there's another brayse where Rabbi Lazar, the Ben Shemaya, clearly rules that even by olives, if it started oozing out, and it would ooze out anyway, and all you did was you accelerate the process, it's not osim hatayde. And the Bryce is as follows. Okay, also Rav Hoshim in the door, Rav Hoshim came from the door, also he came, but Isim Masnit to be, or they brought a Bryce with him, that Zaysim and Novim, olives and grapes, Shediskin Ma'ed of Shabbos, that you went ahead and squeezed out of Shabbos, the Yotsu Ma'atzman, and they came out on its own, Asudin is also. Notice anything that comes out on its own is still also. Let's say you cracked the grape, you started crushing it, and then it continued flowing on its own on Shabbos. And the question is, can you drink the juice that came out on Shabbos on its own? And he says it's awesome, because we're scared that next time you're going to squeeze it. Rabbi Loza and Rav Shimon Matirin. Rabbi Loza and Rav Shimon say that it's mutter. Why? Because they say that once it's oozing on its own, and anyway it all would have flowed out, then even though you quicken the process, it doesn't matter. Says so Rabbi Yisrael Chanina, Brais L'Shmila, he didn't hear this Brais, and that's why he came up with his own thing with the Chalos Dvash. That's why he came up with his own thing, Rabbi Shmuel. No, but Rabbi Loza, my time lomik Rabbi Chanina. Why doesn't he bring that Rabbi Shmuel? Amalach will tell you. Lavit Melodim, we learn Amar Rabbi Chanina Mayechanan b'mechusar in dicha. If it's required, dicha kuliyam. No, if there's a number of steps in the process. If you didn't do the major crushing yet, kuliyam lepligi. Everyone agrees that it's aser. Why? Because it would not have all flowed. You didn't crush it enough. It wouldn't have all flowed on its own. By putting the beam, you're actually making the juice that would not have flown on its own to keep the flowing out. So therefore, had you squeezed it, it'd be asam adaraisa. And everyone agrees it's asa. Keep pligi when they're arguing b'mechusarin shchika, that the next step, the last step, hasn't been yodet. V'hani in amish anami ki mechusarin dicha dami amish na also, it's missing a main step. And therefore, in our Mishnah, I disagree that we can use Rabbi Shmuel, because according to Rabbi Shmuel, our Mishnah would be usher. Because in our Mishnah, you just did the initial crushing. There's still a lot more to go, and it would not have all flown out on its own if he wouldn't have put the beam. So then we would, Rabbi Shammai definitely would have ussered, because he's saying if you would have squeezed in the Shabbos, you'd be ussered, because it would not have all flown out on its own. So therefore, I couldn't learn that the Mishnah is Rabbi Shmuel. I had to find someone else, Rabbi Lozer. Rabbi Chanina ruled like Rabbi Shmuel that it's permitted, the juice that comes out on its own, if you're allowed to, it's permitted. If you're up to the last process. Shemen shel bad odin. What about oil that belongs to the actual person who owns the olive press? We'll just continue, even to talk about an olive press, so we'll continue talking about that. It used to be that any remnants of oil left in the olive press belonged to the owner, not of the olives, but to the owner of the press. And the same thing is with machzolos shel badadin, or the covers they used to put on top of the olives. There were pieces of olives left, whatever it is. He was allowed to keep it. And the question is, on Shabbos, is a muktzanat. Rav holds like Rabbi Huda, that anything he didn't think about right now is considered muktzah. And like Rabbi Huda, who's machmin muktzah on Shabbos. And Shmuel Rabbi Shimon says that there's no muktzah. That even though it had other uses, since it could have been eaten as food, it's not muktzah, and therefore you're allowed to eat it on Shabbos. Hani, karchiduzuz, these pairs of covers were on a boat. They used to cover parts of the boat with these mats. Again, Rav also, even though it could be used for other things, but since you're using it now for something which is also, he was like a muta that it's also. It's like an oil or something. And Shmuel Shari, again, he doesn't hold like a Yehuda that holds that since it could be also used for things which in other activities which are not really aser, it's permitted. Other Shari learn different kinds of muktzeh, machzeh mias, machzeh iser, we're not going to go into that. Like it was a cover of fish. Amar Nachman says, Aids, if you have a goat, l'chalba, its main primary purpose is for milking. And you want to know on Yom Tov if it's muktzah, so you are you allowed to shecht this animal, or you say, look, it was dedicated for milking for fowl. You can't use it on Yom Tov unless you had it particularly in mind. Even though it was always suitable to be a shechten, if you hold like a behud, it's muktzah. Or rochel, or a sheep legizasa for shearing. Again, you could shecht it, but you anticipated to use it for its wool and to leave it alive. So is that considered muktzah, even though it's suitable to be slaughtered on Yom Tov? Or tanagoylus lebeyosa, you have a tanagoylus, a hen for its eggs, or toile, or cows, the lidoya, you had a mind to use it for business and sell it, or for plowing, the tamri, the isko, dates that you had this set aside to sell, but right now, and you want to eat it on Yom Tov, is it muktzah not? Rab also, Rab Asses, because he says that even though it's all suitable and edible, it's considered muktzah like Rabbi Yehuda. Shmuel Amar Mutzmul Mutter, because he holds like Rabbi Shimon, that if it's edible and it's suitable, it's not really muktzah. Ukamifgi, and there, the crux of their argument is similar to Rabbi Yehuda with Rabbi Shimon, whether there's muktzah or not, which we'll learn about later. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to actually prepare before Yom Tov which animals you want to shecht, because otherwise it's muktzah, and according to Rabbi Shimon, no, you don't. Ahu Tamida, there was a student, the Oide that ruled Bilcharta the Argis, in the city called Charta, that belonged to a man called Argis, who was a magician, and somehow or another he built the city, this magician, and that person was still buried there, so they used to call the city the Charta of Argis, and Rav Amnuna lived in that city where the student was. And he ruled Kirab Shimon. He ruled Rav Shimon by things which are not muktzah. Shamtei Rav Amnuna, put him in chedim. Says the Gemara, why are you putting chedim? Well, Rav Shimon's feeling. The halach actually is like Rav Shimon. That's not muktzah. So why in the world would you put him chedim? Says the Gemara, ba'asei de Rav have a very important rule. The Rav of that city, even though he passed away, was Rav. That's not fair. In the city that Rav reigned, the Rav was the sole arbiter. You have to follow his psukim. Even if the halach elsewhere is not accepted, but in his city, he has the sole authority, and therefore you have to follow what he says. Okay, interesting, yep. Hani Tretamidid with his two students. Chad Matzil Bechad Mana. There's a fire, and you're allowed to save a certain amount of food and drink, and which you want to a chotzer. So one says you're allowed to save Bechad Mana. You can take one pot and put in as much as you want. And Bechad Matzil Be'arbe V'chamish Mana. And the other one said in four or five pots. The way Rashi learns here, we'll see the learning of Rabbi Machleik is called Kisveh, so we won't go into it, but Rashi learns four or five smaller pots, but then you took these four or five smaller pots and you put it into one larger pot. So at the end of the day, you're only doing one carrying. So what exactly is Machleik is? We'll discuss the Gemara, because all the Shreim learn differently. They're arguing, the Rabbah, Mazabda, Rabbunah. They're arguing the same Machleik is those Amroim, we'll see later on. Okay, the next Mishnah. We're talking about all the different gzeiros regarding Friday afternoon leading into Shabbos. Ain't sailing, you're not allowed to roast basar, meat, batzel, onions, or bay and eggs Friday. Ela kadeshi yitzayil b'yoyim, unless it was roasted already on Shabbos. From here, it seems it has to be totally roasted, and we'll see later whether it has to be totally roasted or whether only it has to be kemaychol ben derusayi, which means half or a third roasted. In other words, we're worried that you stoke the coal. And if it's half roasted or totally roasted, it's like you're not going to. Ain noisin pasta tana, nor should you place bread in the oven. In those days, placing bread in the oven was a whole art, and you had to stick it to the sides of the oven. It was vertically. Ain noisin pasta tana, you do not place bread in the oven im chashechet right before Shabbos. Over loy charoro al gabi chol, nor can you put biscuits on top of coal. Ela kedei sheyikmru paneh b'yayim, unless it turned brown. Machlek is whether, we'll see the Gemara, whether turned brown means the side facing the fire or the side attached to the wall of the oven. Rabbi Lezer says that it should be the tachten, the part that's, the Gemara will explain what tachten is. Is that the part exposed to the fire or the part to the wall? You're allowed to take the Korban Pesach and to suspend it in the air of an oven of a barbecue or roast. And he continues roasting on Shabbos itself. Even though we just said a minute ago you shouldn't do that on Friday unless it's half roasted or fully roasted. But here you're allowed to buy Korban Pesach. Why? Because it's a whole group of people, and each one will remind the other one. If anybody wants to stoke the coal, the other people who are, remember the whole idea of Korban Pesach is you have a number of people joining in together. It's a B'nai Chabura. So therefore B'nai Chabura will remind each other, hey, it's Shabbos, what are you doing? that if you had, you know, the Beis HaMikid, which was in the Azara, there was a big fiery flame. People used to walk there barefoot, so they needed a place where they could warm up. And they had like a big bonfire. And we're not worried that they're going to play around with the fire on Shabbos because you have a big fire there. And and therefore you're allowed to do that, and you're allowed to do that as what? As long as the fire caught onto a little bit of wood, then you, it's enough. But a gvulin outside of Beis HaMikdash, they should techaza ur beruba. You need the fire to catch onto most logs. Otherwise, we're scared you're going to move the logs around in the fire on Shabbos itself to make sure the bonfire works. So it's not sufficient just to start the fire by a bonfire before Shabbos. You have to have most of the logs burning. Rabbi Yehuda, however, says that if it was made out of coal, not logs, you don't need the fire to have most of the coal burning. The pchamim, when it comes to coal, kol shehu. As long as it's burning a little bit, it's sufficient. Because generally, once it starts, it doesn't extinguish itself. It will continue burning, so we're not worried that on Shabbos you're going to stoke the coal to or fan the flames and so on. Okay, so that was Chafim Aleph, and we'll continue tomorrow, Mitzvah Shem.